Talk about something sounding better than it is. I guess it's always hard to start these things, and I'll place a caveat around it. I'm going to talk about where we're going from an INGA perspective, what we've seen, what we've achieved, what we haven't achieved. And I'll put that in the context of, I guess, for those of you who are runners or do any sporting events, you know, most people will go for a run, and if they're asked how they go, they'll say, yeah, I ran 10K. And anyone who does any running will know they actually ran 9K, maybe 8K. Or if they have a, you know, if they've had a problem in a race or something like that, they say, yeah, you know, tore a bit of a hammy, or, you know, there'll be an excuse. And I guess the caveat I put around, you know, when I talk about our successes here is, you know, if I talk about it and it sounds like 10K, you can probably believe it's 8K, 9K. And if I talk about it from an excuse perspective, again, you know, there'll be things that I will I'll say that I'm probably understating a little bit from a difficulty perspective and some of the challenges we face. But it's been an interesting year, to say the least. And when we sat down the other night and worked out how the heck we would start this presentation, or what I would say to start it, there was one person sitting there about two glasses of wine in who came out with, I think, the perfect start, and that is simply, it was the best of times and it was the worst of times. If you look at what we're doing, you know, from a technology transformation program, it's very easy to simply focus around the technology aspects, to look at the thing and say, you know, we need to fix systems, we need to reduce complexity, things like that. If you step back from it and look at a transformation program, it's actually far more encompassing than that. You need to look at it from a business perspective, you need to look at it from an engagement perspective. You know, the challenges and problems that we see within technology are very often rooted internally to technology, but many of the other aspects are actually reflective of challenges we see within the business, engagement within the business, and the opportunities we face. I came on board to ING in April, and it was it was presented as a very interesting opportunity, a transformation program, an organisation, obviously, you know, partly owned by ANZ Bank, partly owned by ING Worldwide, and with a very strong growth agenda. When I talked to the people there, they said, you know, there are some clear challenges around technology. Our engagement from a staff perspective is quite low. We don't really understand why. Business engagement is actually worse. There's not a lot of confidence in technology. There's a feeling generally that technology is expensive and it's not actually delivering. And there's no real clear direction. No one understands where we're going to go from a technology perspective and what we're going to do. I think a lot of those things were perception in nature. There's no doubt. As I talk about this, we'll go through some of the challenges. And some were very much incorrect. And that came out fairly quickly once I sort of sat down and started really looking at it. Just to put a bit of perspective around it, I need to roll back to 2007. Because it was in 2007 that the INGA board, the CEO at the time, engaged an external consulting group to look at the entire model across the business. And as a result of that, moved technology from being a division that was standalone in its own right into a customer solutions model, essentially a CIO model, where they brought together the large cost centres within the business and a central services type model under a COO in Fred Bertram. Fred was new to the organisation, came across from ANZ, having come back from India, and is a fascinating individual to work with, I have to say. He's a lot of fun. The group that was formed, 1,400 people of the total INGA staff of around 2,300 people. So very, very sizable, and technology, 600 people within that. What we talked about there, or what was proposed, was, as I said, the creation of the customer solutions model, One of the key things missing from a technology perspective was a centralisation process and an architecture team. There was no architecture group within the organisation and no one with any responsibility for setting overall technology direction. And there was also a program of work recommended to reduce technology complexity and improve capability. And that program of work was called the Refresh Program. I think it's been documented in the press as approximately a $40 million piece of work from a technology perspective. If you ponder just for a second, there's a piece of work around the Refresh Program and fixing technology, but there's no architecture group to set a direction and understand where that direction is, then you start to see some of the divergent challenges that we walk into in that space. The other aspect that was associated with that was the CEO at the time was heading off to a broader role at a region level, and so the work that was done to bring customer solutions together was done fairly quickly and probably with minimal change management. And so what we saw from a technology perspective was people that were working in a line of business, largely aligned with the business, but with no overarching technology strategy or technology approach, pulled out of those lines of business, brought together, and we saw a development team of 350 people brought together in one huge lump. We saw a small architecture team created out to the side, and we saw a loss of faith by the technology staff in the process that was actually evolving, and we also saw a loss of engagement from a business perspective. There were, as they lost their hands around those levers and it became a central body, the business felt that they no longer had visibility to the work being done and what was being done. I guess we spent 100 days, I spent 100 days walking around and talking to people. And the first thing I did was take a leaf out of, I think, Peter Clare's book at St. George, where he started to meet with all the staff. And I decided I was going to meet with all the staff. So I took an approach of having coffee with the staff, 8 people at a time. And it's amazing how wide you can get when you have about 10 or 15 coffee meetings during a week and sit and listen to people and talk to people. But it really did start to give me an understanding of some of the challenges. You know, the staff engagement problem wasn't really a problem. The staff are engaged. There's some areas that have challenges. But what they were telling us very strongly is that they're sick of unstructured change, they're sick of uncertainty, and in many instances they're sick of being pigeonholed. They're not getting the career opportunities and the growth opportunities. And that is in itself raised another problem. The project process, the project initiation process, simply wasn't working. The opportunity to actually take an idea from inception through to being a project that could then be funded simply didn't exist, didn't work. Rather, it was a case of, I have an idea, give me some money and I'll work out what scope I'm going to do. So there were some real challenges in that space, and that was leading to another challenge, which was that we had a 50% contractor mix. So staff were in and staff had an expertise around the legacy platform. As we moved forward with projects, what we saw was a need to ramp them up quickly, go to the market, get contractors, and the contractors tended to draw the plum jobs, hence the perception of, or the reality in fact, of staff being pigeonholed and not getting the career growth opportunities. So, you know, if you look at a team of 350 developers and you consider that 50% of them were contractors, in many instances some of those contractors have been with the organisation a number of years, then you can see that alone brought with it some challenges from a cost perspective, from a growth perspective, from a staff engagement perspective. Another interesting nuance that we discovered up front is that there were 4 programs of work underway that were actually larger than anything we did at St George in all my time there, with the exception of the integration work. So projects of that magnitude in an organisation significantly smaller than St George, in and of itself raised some questions around what we were doing, how we were doing it, and similar. And obviously those programs had been running for anywhere between 2 years, 18 months and similar. And as the market started to change and shift, the strategy behind some of those projects was no longer valid from a business perspective. So some challenges emerged there as well. I mentioned there was no architect or technology strategy, and the team had just been put in place and was emerging as best we could call it. And I guess there were other programs. The Refresh program was one example, which was a key transformational program for the organisation. And because of some of the perceptions around IT, we'd actually given that away to an external vendor to do a lot of the work for us. And so, you know, the work we were doing from a futures perspective, I think, was not actually being owned, controlled and driven internally to ING. That was the first 3 months. It was an interesting period of time and brought with it some challenges. There were some massive, massive positives, and I think it's important to consider those. The organisation would do release after release of software around the vast majority of the project with zero errors. They would put in a quarterly release and there would be no severity one type errors. The work that was being done was absolutely first rate from a technology perspective. One of the things that wasn't happening is it wasn't being communicated. There was no release management structure, there was no communication to the business of when a release was going in, and as such, if there was a challenge around a release, it came as a surprise to the business, and again reinforced some of the perceptions for what is fundamentally a very, very good technology team. In the weekend press, there was a quote which was for Obama, and I think his problems are in a whole different league to anyone else's. But one of the things they said within that quote was that you better do the tough stuff up front, because if you think you can delay tough decisions and tiptoe past the graveyard, then you're in a lot of trouble. And there were key things that we had to do. And so, you know, we looked at it and I think we started spinning the plates. If you think back to those old television newsreels of where you'd see people spinning plates on the end of a stick and the poor bugger running along spinning plates across different levels and trying to keep them all spinning, that was the kind of model that we started to move towards. We picked four key areas and we said we need to fix these areas and we need to fix them fairly quickly, and they can then start to drive where we want to go from a 2009 perspective. And one of the other things we said is we're going to take these four large programs of work and we are going to finish them. So 2008 is going to be about putting into place the structures and the framework for 2009, clearing the decks, starting the communication and adjusting the whole perception around and the reality around what people were seeing from a technology perspective. The first thing we did, we took that 350-person development area and we started to break it up. And we essentially set up four areas. One area key to us and an area of huge focus for us is the business engagement team. We took business analysts, we took a lot of people up front, and we said we're going to not only engage with the business around what we're doing, but we're going to provide you with people for free to enable you to start up your projects to work through your scope. And to get that across the line, what we said, we went to the executive board and we said, the project funding pool is in place, and we churn a lot around the start of projects, and we probably spend upwards of 12% of our total funding in churn upfront in the project startup. So we're going to take 6% of that and we're going to fund a team of people that will work hand in hand with your business to be able to take the ideas that you have from inception through to a fully defined scope, a cost model, and a clearly defined implementation plan, and then we'll bring it back for approval. So that it'll no longer be a case of give us money and we'll work out what we're going to do. Instead, it'll be a clear contract between technology that says this is the scope, this is the cost, this is when we will deliver it, and we go forward from there and we manage it from there. And that's been a huge win for us. We now have, as I stand here today, clear visibility to our pipeline of projects across what is shaping up as the next 15 months, the costs associated with those projects and the resourcing required for those projects. And that gives us a whole different set of levers and a different set of options. We've got, as I mentioned, those 50% contractors. And those 50% contractors are sourced from various organisations, in the Sydney environment. There's no partnership model there. There is no continuity of intellectual property. And whilst it provides us the ability to flex up and flex down, it does it in a very cost-ineffective way. So the other thing we've done is now that we've got visibility to requirements going forward, we've moved to partner with two Indian vendors to help to provide us initially with staff augmentation. So we will begin to replace those contractors with a partner organisation, and we will, in doing so, start to capture the IP and position ourselves wherever we want to go from a future perspective. That's been a bit of a journey for us, and obviously it's been a challenge internally because the message and the concern, particularly from the permanent staff and indeed even from a lot of the longer term contractors, is what about me and what are we doing? We have been able to go through and look at the permanent staff and look at the challenges and the opportunities we have there, and because we have an understanding now where our pipeline is of where we're going, we can shift those permanent staff, we can focus on the training of those permanent staff, and we can start to address some of those pigeonholing issues that have been happening. And we're seeing some very, very good results there, I think, from a staff perspective. Are we going to move to a model where we don't have any contractors other than our Indian partners? Absolutely not. That's not what this is about. This is about giving us an opportunity to be able to flex up, flex down, and maintain a level of intellectual property and a key partnership for it. So two key aspects there. Get our hands around the pipeline so we can start to plan and really begin then to drive that planning process. It's been, that in itself has been, I think, a culture change for the organisation. So across the various business areas, there was initially a very strong degree of resistance to putting some formality around the project startup process and the actual funding process. But over the last 3 months, we've seen almost, a 180 degree turn. And our business engagement is now very strong in this space, and our ability to drive this and the opportunities it gives us from a technology perspective, I think, are becoming very clearly understood. So we looked at the contractors, we looked at the business engagement. Importantly, we built the right leadership team. And we're still evolving, we're still changing, but what we did, we looked through our structures, we fine-tuned it and collapsed it down. As I said, we took that 350-person development-type model and we broke it up into four pieces: the business engagement group, the architecture group, the development support group, and the production group, obviously with the finance guys and everything around the side. The other key thing we did, because our architectural transformation is key to us, is that we captured the projects. We said that not only does business engagement work with the business to identify those opportunities, but all projects within the organisation will come in through the architecture group. Okay, and the architecture group will look at those projects from the point of view of how do we continue to evolve our architecture and which projects can we use to help us evolve versus which ones do we just go back to the keeper and implementing it in the fastest possible way. We put in place a central costing team, an estimating team, that engages around each of the projects with the development staff and ensures that we actually have funding across all the areas of the project, including all the business costs and, you know, an ongoing 5-year total cost of ownership type model. So that when we actually go back, we have to the business and to the government for approval for a project, not only do we have the contractual items that I mentioned to you before, but we have clear visibility as to how this particular project will help us transition our architecture. So what we've done is we've taken that original initiative of $40 million that was buried largely within IT and essentially said to the business, if you guys could just wait, we'll get our house in order. And we've turned it around. We said to the business, we don't actually need that. We're going to do it in a different way. And we're going to do it on the back of driving business enablement on a 3-month, 6-month type basis. And understand that we will come to you for some projects and we will say this one's going to cost a little bit more and it's going to take a little bit longer because it's going to drive this aspect of our architectural transformation, but we will still deliver it across a 6-month window or a 3-month window in line with your business expectations. So we shifted completely the emphasis from internal to technology, give me a chunk of money and go away and I'll sort out my house, to a model that says we will drive technology transformation but we'll do it fully engaged with the business and on the back of providing business capability in a timely manner. And again, it's one of the key things that has seen a shift in perception around IT and what it is we're trying to do from a technology perspective. What else have we done? We've done a bunch of stuff, and it's been, I think, a fairly interesting journey for us. There are a whole lot of things that we still need to do. You know, we're not where we need to be from a lockdown of our 3-year journey perspective. Still, we're getting there. We're a lot closer than we have been, but we still face a lot of challenges in that space. Obviously, the market pressures are causing significant challenges for us. And I have to say that one of the things that IMG has done is hang on to the growth agenda. It's really easy in this time to sit back and say, we're just going to batten down the hatches and we're not going to do anything and we'll see how it comes out. That is certainly not the model that we're adopting at IMG. The project funding that we have for next year is commensurate to this year. It's a little bit less, and it might actually get to be a little bit less as we go forward, depending upon what the markets do. But it is still very, very much a growth agenda. There is still a lot of work that will be done across the organisation that will position us for the 2-3 year type window when we come out of the current challenges that the market faces. Obviously, we have a wealth management business, insurance businesses and similar, and what we're able to do at the moment is to understand where we actually want to focus the spend, which bits will drive us across the next couple of years and which bits will actually we need to put in place so that as the market turns and we start to grow again, we're not left sitting in a backwater somewhere. So I think that's a very important message from an IMG perspective, particularly to the technology staff, because, you know, I read a lot and I see a lot about organisations that are genuinely battening down. There are articles in the press today around the challenges that some of the majors face around their technology transformation programs. At the moment, you know, we're walking into this thing eyes wide open, but we are not backing away from our commitment to actually transform not only the technology, but the entire business engagement, project initiation and overall model. From a staff perspective, as I mentioned, we've moved them across. We are focused on training. And I guess, you know, we're shifting the thinking there, and this is causing some challenges, I think, for a number of people within the organisation. But, you know, one of the things we've looked at from an Indian partnering perspective is using those guys to be able to help train some of our internal staff. So where we have people working in legacy registry type applications who express an interest to move into newer technologies around TIBCO, Informatica and similar, we're quite prepared to utilise our Indian partners to have those people, you know, work over for 3 or 4 months in India as part of the training programs that they operate there. And that's actually been fairly well received. We were a little concerned that it might be seen as the, you know, what was second prize. But I think it's been very well received across the organisation as a, you know, an opportunity for staff to grow and to learn and to experience different things. So it's a and in doing so, what we're doing is breaking down the us and them type environment, and we're showing a real commitment to our staff base. And that's key, because in the end, we can do a whole bunch of stuff around transformation, but if we don't bring our staff along with us and we don't get the right people in the right places with the right attitudes, then it's it becomes a difficult journey. Yeah, and I mean, as I said, we've done some hard things. We sat down and we looked at our maintenance and support type staff numbers and utilisation, and we had, I think, approximately 124 staff with a utilisation around 36%. We now have 90 staff with a utilisation of 82%. And again, that was off the back of either shifting people projects, you know, ramping down our contractor commitment, and in a couple of instances, you know, offering people opportunities to do things elsewhere. So it's been a interesting 6 months. Going forward, we have, I think we have the basics in place for what it is that we want to achieve, and it's now about executing against those basics. So as I said, 2008 for us has been a positioning year, a clear the decks year, and an opportunity to actually get under the bonnet around a number of areas. 2009 is the opportunity for us to utilise the models against the funding for the projects and against the things that we want to do, and to actually drive that transformation and move it from a transformation agenda into a way we do business type agenda. So, flipping over to page 3, see what I haven't covered off. As we sit here at the moment, November 2008, staff engagement is up 20 points on where it was start of the year. That's a tick for us. Those four large programs have been completed. The revamp of the refresh program, and the technology transformation around middleware, TIBCO, Informatica and similar goes live on December 6th. And with that, we bring a straight-through processing capability to some small aspects of our life risk business. But what we have done is taken that program back in-house, taken control of it, and moved it from a position in June where it was probably not an achievable program because it wasn't clearly thought out, to a model that will go live, as I mentioned, in the future. Our ongoing quarterly releases roll through, I think I mentioned, as we sit here at the moment, we've done 3 of the 4 for the year, and 2 of those were defect-free. One not so defect-free, but we'll take that. And I guess our Indian partnerships are in place, and we'll move to that model as we transition down and transition up through our full program of work for next year. We'll move to that model and put it in place. And from an overall perspective, the costs are where we need them to be. So it's been a great year for the technology team, and for the leadership team at ING, and there's been a lot of things that have been accomplished. Next year is going to be very tough. As I mentioned, we have a growth agenda, but it's still going to be, I think, very, very tough for everybody. And we're all waiting to see if the market continues to bounce along at 4,000 or at least kicks up, or in a worst case scenario, drops significantly under 4,000. And obviously, we as an organisation, just the same as every other organisation, will react to that and see where we go. In closing, let me loop back and close out, I guess, with another quote from Dickens, from the same book, the only Dickens book I think I've read. And it's, you know, we've started down a path and we have a very, very long way to go. And as I said, everything that I've talked about that was good, you can probably ramp down by 10%, and everything that I've mentioned was a challenge, you can probably ramp up by 10%. But I think in the end, it's a far, far better thing we do now than we've done before.